Now we're holding on to focus. I'm going to Aleph, the second line. We've been previously a Braisa, where we learned two Braisas. One of them had said that when it comes to the Parah Adumah, the sprinklings of its blood have to be two things, Lishma and in the direction of the Heichel. Then we have another Braisa that says it has to be Lishma, but it doesn't have to be in the direction of the Heichel. So we said, so first we had a long discussion saying those might represent the opinions of Rabbi Yehuda and the Chachamim respectively. And then the last thing we said was that Rava said that it depends what we mean by in the direction of the, we mean by in the direction versus not in the direction of the Heichel. Is he basically standing facing the Heichel, but he's just a few degrees off in one direction or another, then that's fine. But if he's facing in a completely different direction to the north or to the south and sprinkles, then that's when the Braisa would be saying that it's possible. Now, the Braisa had, on the other hand, the Braisa had contrasted and said, Omar, so we said in the Braisa, v'shebifnim v'shebimetzara, as far as the sprinklings that are done of blood of Chatois HaPnimius, the Korbanos of Yom Kippur, the Parhel M'davash HaTzibur, etc., Shaloi L'Shmon Psolus, if they're done Shaloi L'Shmon, they're also possible, because a Chatos that's done Shaloi L'Shmon is possible, Shaloi M'chuvanos Kferis, and if they're done not in the proper direction, then they're kosher, so they're not done. So they're not done directly towards the Bein Abadim or directly towards the Parochas, etc. So then Ksheiros, and they're still kosher. So then we're asked, Vahatanya, but we learn in a Braisa, Bein Shalom Lishmon, Bein Shalom Mechuvon is Ksheiros. So we have another Braisa that says whether they're done Lishmon or not, and whether they're Mechuvon is or not, then it's kosher. So who would be that it says that it's fine if they're Shalom Lishmon? So the answer is Omer Yosef, like Kasha, Horab the Yezer Horabbanon. The Braisa that said the second Braisa is specifically about the Mitzvah. Fine, when it comes to the Chatois HaPnimius, everybody agrees it has to be Lishma, because again, they're Chatois. But when it comes to the mitzvah, then you have one braisa that says that if you did the sprinklings of the oil of the mitzvah shalom l'shma, then it's kosher. And then you have another braisa that says that the first braisa says they're possible, and another one says they're kosher. So what is that? Amar Rabbi Yosef, like Kasha Horab L'Yezer Horab B'Horabanan. So the two braises are following the opinions of Rabbi Yezer and the Chachamim respectively. Rabbi Yezer, the Makish Osham L'Chatas, where Rabbi Yezer learns that there's a Hekish between Chatas and Osham, namely, because the Pasuk says, we learned in Zvachim, Kachatas Ka'osham Torah Achas Lahem. Both the Chatas and Osham have the same rule. And we learned back at the beginning of Zvachim that because of that, Rabbi Yezer holds that just like a Chatas is Pasul Shalai L'Shma, so is an Osham. By the same token then, so he's going to say, Makish Nami Lug, L'Oshem. So he's going to say that there's also a Hekish between the Oshem itself and the Lug. Namely, because the Pasuk says that you have to bring the Korban, and then it says, V'loig Shaman, and then you also have to bring a Lug of oil with it. So you have a Hekish, and therefore that means just like the Oshem itself is Pasul Shalai L'Shmai, so is the oil. So he holds that if the sprinkling was done shalom l'shma, then nothing doing. Rabbanon my makri, whereas the Chachamim hold, the Chachamim don't hold of that hekish. We learned from Zvachim, they use that hekish for other limudim. So they're not using it to teach us that concept that an osham and a chatas are similar as far as shalom l'shma. Well, the question is, Rabbi Eliezer, now, according to Rabbi Eliezer, you're telling me we have a Hekish and then another Hekish. We're making a Hekish, according to him, between Chatas and Osham, and then between the Osham and the Loig. Does that work? According to Rabbi Eliezer, how is that supposed to work? You're going to have, you're learning one thing from another with a Hekish, and then you're learning a third thing from the second one with a Hekish. We learned in Zvachim, we had a whole sugya on this subject of lomid min alomid. We said when it comes to kodshim, you can't necessarily always, just because you learn something with one of the yud gimel middos, then go and learn another thing from the second one in the same way. And one of the examples we said there that doesn't work is a hekish from a hekish. So how is Rabbi Eliezer doing that? So no, Ella Omar Rava. So Rava says no. So the answer is Hava Ho Rabbanon. Both brises are referring to the Chachamim. Kan Lahachshu HaKorban, but Kan Lahautzis Shloi Olu LaBaylam L'Shum Choyva. The one brise that says that it's kosher means the korban itself is kosher. We're not going to pass all the korban because he did the sprinkling Shloi L'Shma. But the first brise that said that it had the first brise that said that it has to be L'Shmon, that means in order to Lahautzis, to make him acceptable. In other words, that now he should be able to enter the Beis Mikdash or eat Kodshim, he's not able to do that because you have to have, the oil has to have been done properly. So it means, in other words, the oil will be kosher in the sense the korban as a whole is kosher, and it's a valid osham, the kohenim can eat it, and the oil as well, actually, the rest of the oil can be eaten by the kohenim, as we've learned before. Rashi brings you the relevant psukim, that it's one of the 24 matnas kohona. So they'll be able to do that. But the owner was not Yotze, and he's going to have to bring another korban. Again, these things have korban and shaloi olol bayalim shum chayva are in parenthesis, and these are, as we've had throughout Zvachim and Menachos so far, we have many times a note that somebody wrote on the side of the Gemara to clarify something, and then the printer is by mistake put it in. Talking now, let's talk about more things that are ma'akev one another. So we started with talking about with a mincha, with the various components of it are ma'akev one another. Then we talked about a number of other mitzvahs where you have to have two or four or seven or whatever components, and all of them are ma'akev one another. So here's more. Shivak ne menorah ma'akev zeseh. The seven branches of menorah are ma'akev one another, meaning, in other words, if the Beis Mikdash has a menorah of less than seven branches, to be exact, Rashi says you have a central stem and then you have six branches branching off of it, then it's no good, then it's possible. Shiva Nerisah Ma'akvin Zaseh. And similarly, the seven lamps on top of it are ma'akiv one another, you have to have all the lamps over there. So there is one of the Mefarshim, Mikdash David, talks about that maybe if the lamps have been removed temporarily, for example, then we're going to talk about in the Gemara, actually, whether the lamps are removable or not. Actually, we're going to talk about it later in the Masechta, whether the lamps are removable or not. If we say they are, fine, even if they're removed, as long as they exist, then it would still be kosher. But he argues that only if one of them is completely lost or destroyed or whatever, only then we'd be saying it's possible. The Gemara is also going to talk about, by the way, when the menorah is made out of gold, then you have all the decorations of it that are described in the pasuk are also ma'akev one another. The Mishnah doesn't mention that, says Tosfos, because the Mishnah is talking about no matter what metal the menorah is made from, and as we're going to see in the Gemara, it needs those decorations only if it's made from gold. Next, the Mishnah continues. The two parashias in a mezuzah, Shema and Vahoyim Shemaya, are ma'akev one another. If either one of them is missing, a mezuzah is possible, and not only a whole parasha is missing, even one detail of the writing is ma'akev and makes it possible. Rashi points out, because by mezuzah, and it says, uchsav tom, and the same way as we learned by Dalad Minim yesterday, we said that ulakach tem lochem means it has to be lakicha tama, perfect taking, and therefore we said you have to have all four minim, subject to the machlokas we showed and we talked about. Similarly here with the mezuzah, uchsav tom means it has to be a perfect writing without any parashis missing, and without even one letter missing. And as we'll see in the Gemara, it means a letter can't be missing, it means every letter has to be individually surrounded by parchment. This is how we're going to get into, in most of the rest of this parak, we're going to get extensively into the dinim of writing tefillin and mezuzahs and sifrei Torah. Similarly, Ira parashis shiva tefillin ma'akvin zuasu, the four parashis in tefillin, are ma'akev one another. You have to have all four of them. We're going to learn later on a daf lama dalad. We'll talk about the famous machlokas Rashi and Rabbi Natan, which goes back actually long before then, as far as the proper order of the parashias. But everybody agrees you need those four parashias. And again, filuk sav echad ma'akvan, even one detail of the writing is ma'akev and makes it possible, because it says v'hoyu l'taytafis, and v'hoyu means, as we learned yesterday, whenever it says a lashon of hoya of havoya, then it means it has to be this way without anything missing. The Mishnah finishes off. Arbet tzitzis ma'akvah zuasu. The four tzitzis are ma'akvah one another. Here, this is what you were asking about yesterday. If a person only has three tzitzis on their beged, no good. You have to have all four. Shabbaita mitzvah achas, because all four of them constitute one mitzvah. Now, we are going to learn in the next perek that, on the other hand, as we talked about a little yesterday, the white strings and the tchelas are not ma'akvah one another. You have only white strings. You wear those as we do nowadays. You made tzitzis with tchelas, and the white strings broke off, and all you have left is the tchelas strings, also fine. We'll learn that in the next parak, Bez Hashem. But you have to have all four, you have to have tzitzis on all four corners. Shabbat and mitzvah achas, because all of them constitute one mitzvah. Rabbi Shmuel Omer, Arbaita and Abba Mitzvahs. Rabbi Shmuel disagrees and says the four of them constitute four mitzvahs. According to him, each tzitzah is a separate mitzvah of its own, and that would mean, in other words, according to him, they're not ma'akev one another. Later in the perek, we'll eventually get into, closer to the end of the perek, we'll get into Bez Hashem, we'll get into Rabbi Shmuel's opinion and see why he holds that way. An interesting point that's made someplace is that we know there are 613 mitzvahs. If according to Rabbi Shmuel, each of the tzitzis is a separate mitzvah, then it would come out according to him you have too many mitzvahs. So that would mean, doesn't it mean that there has to be some place where there's mitzvahs subtracted that according to him are not mitzvahs? And the answer is yes, there are actually a few things in Shas where Rabbi Shmuel holds that a certain thing is not a mitzvah, and Rabbi Akiva disagrees with him and says that it is, and it comes out there are exactly three such places. So you actually have, according to both of them, it works out. According to Rabbi Shmuel, you have four mitzvahs within tzitzis, but you're missing three mitzvahs in other places. And according to Rabbi Akiva, and according to the Chachamim, and the Halacha is like that, but tzitzis is just one mitzvah, then you have those three can be counted in. I don't remember offhand what the three are. Okay. So the Gemara says, "My time." Well, let's start with the Menorah. Why is it that so most of today's Gemara then is going to be discussing the details of the Menorah? So my time, why are we saying that the seven branches of the Menorah are ma'akev one another? Havoya, because it says Havoya, because it says its expression that they have to be. Kafterim of Knoisim and Menor Yiyu, and Yiyu means that they have to be the way it is. So then once you have the branches as well, then in Mephoshim talk about once the branches, then automatically the lamps as well, because the whole purpose of the various Achronim talk about that the Chaim HaKadosh, the Chofetz Chaim talk about that since the branches are there for the lamps, then if you don't have the lamps, then the branches aren't doing their purpose. Okay. The Gemara says, turn it up on. We learn it a Braisa. Let's talk about how the Menorah was made. Menorah hoisa bamina eshes. The menorah was made out of one solid block of gold. You'd take the solid block and you'd go and bang on it with a hammer and draw out and delineate out the various details of it. It wasn't put together of pieces. Uminazahav, and it's supposed to be made out of gold. Asamina grutois. Now, if you made it out of broken pieces of gold, psula, then it would be possible. Meshamin and machas, but if you made it out of other kinds of metal, ksheira, then it will be kosher. So the Gemara asks, Maishnamin agulatoris psula, so why are you telling me if it's made out of broken pieces of gold, then it would be possible? The reason, presumably, is mechum dechtiv miksha vahavoya, because the pasuk says it has to be made miksha, which means out of one solid piece. It actually points out miksha means something that's banged on with a hammer. So that implies, in other words, that it has to be something which the only way to make it is by banging on it with a hammer and making the piece and then delineating out the sections and then the parts of it or whatever, as opposed to welding or soldering or whatever it together. So presumably then that's why it's possible if it's made out of broken pieces, because it says miksha and it says havoya, and we just said that whenever it says havoya means it has to be exactly this way. Well, then we have to ask, shamina matfas nami, then why should it be kosher? If it's made out of, it actually points out there's two meanings. The word taugum on the pasuk translates it as negid, which means pulled out. So it has two things. It means, in other words, that it has to be that you're pulling out, that you're delineating out the shape and the details of the menorah using from one piece, using the hammer. And again, that means that you're using mitra, means that you bang on it with a hammer. So the question is, we're saying that it has to be that way because it says mitra and it says havoya, shamin and matras nami. Well, then why should it be kosher if it's made from other metals? Zohav v'havoya. The pasuk says zohav v'havoya. It says gold and it says havoya. So therefore, so it should mean it's possible if it's made out of any other metal other than gold. The answer is amakro te'ose. That's true, but the pasuk says te'ose. It shall be made. That means v'rabas shamin and matras. And from that we learn the menorah should be made even if it's made from other metals. Well, the Gemara asks, the emel rabbis grutois, so maybe the other way around, maybe the te'osa menorah means if all you have available is broken pieces of gold, then you put it together that way. Now, what you could do, of course, you could put the gold into a furnace and melt it, so you've come out afterwards with one solid block, and you do that, that's the way you're supposed to do it. But the question is, maybe you shouldn't need to do it. Maybe it can, in fact, be made of pieces that are soldered or whatever together. So maybe that's what it means. And the answer is loy sakadaitach. You can't think that way. Dam mikra ksiva havoya, because the word havoya, the word yiyu, is in connection with mikra, because the pasuk says you should make the menorah. And then it says gvi'eha, it's various decorations, mimeno yiyu should be from it. So therefore we see that it has to be made of one solid piece. But on the other hand, when it does say zahav, but zahav is earlier in the pasuk, and it doesn't say yiyu in connection with that. So last teos anami amitriksiv. Well, the word teos, let's go how the pasuk goes. The pasuk goes like this. You should make a menorah of pure gold. Miksha teos haminurah, the menorah should be made out of one solid piece. Yurecha, it's base, rakona, and its central stem. Gri'er kaftereo frachaha, the various decorations on it. Mimena yiyu should be from it. So you're telling me that it says havoya, it says yiyu in connection with mikra, and it's further away from zahav tahar. True, but the word teos haminurah is also right next to mikra. So, and you're saying teos haminurah means it can be made no matter what, even from other metals, but it says that in connection with mikra as well. So then we should say that teosa, as long as it's made at all, then we don't care whether it's exactly like in the pasuk, and it would mean that it would be kosher if it's made from pieces of gold that are soldered together. So why not? The answer is miksha la'akev, because the pasuk later on, a few pasukim later, after it summarizes how the menorah is made, it says again the word mikra. So therefore la'akev, and as usual, when it says something twice, then it means that it's ma'akev. Well, we can want to ask Zohav Nami Lakav. Well, it also says twice Zohav. the same thing as it says at the beginning. Well, Sisim Menorah Zohav Tahar, it finishes off. Kola Mikra Achas Zohav Tahar. It all has to be made out of one solid piece of gold. So if you're telling me that the word Mikra is repeated, and that means it has to be from a solid piece, well, then by the same token, it has to be made out of gold. We can want to answer Hai Mai. What kind of an argument is that? If you say that it means that very well when it's made out of grutois, out of broken pieces, it's possible, and if it's made out of other metals, then it's kosher. Zahav, zahav, mikra, mikra. So now we would understand, in fact, why it needs to repeat the word zahav and the word mikra. And the reason would be l'drosha. That would be precisely for this drosha. In other words, what you have is like this: not only in Parshas Truma does it say mikra twice, but also you have in addition it also says mikra yet again in Parshas Baal Oischa. And then, as Gemara is going to go on to say, it means that it's kosher if it's made out of other metals. So if you learn like that, then fine. Then it would mean, in other words, so it can't be made out of grutois. It can be made out of other metals, and therefore, not only do we have where it says zahav twice in the pesukim in Parshas Truma, but and mikra twice. But then you also have it says mikra yet again in Baal Oischa, in order to teach us the limud that we're going to see soon in Parshas Baal Oischa. But if you're going to tell me that it's kosher if it's made from broken pieces of gold, and it's possible if it's made from any other metals, then zahav zahav mikra mikra, my darshas bay, what would you darshan from the extra phrasing in Parshas Baal Oischa? Namely, what drasha are we talking about? In the Tanya, we learn in a Braisa, when the pasuk says about the menorah in Parshas Truma, it says kikar zahav tahar yasa oisa, you should make it out of a kikar of gold, of pure gold, eis kol hakelim ha'ela, together with all of these utensils that I just mentioned before that, you need makocheh or machdeseha, you have the tweezers that you use to pull out the old wicks, and the little pans that you use to clean out the cups of the menorah. Anyway, so we learn from that, when it says that it has to be made out of kikar of gold, we learn from that, ba'a zahav, ba'a kikar. Only when it's made out of gold does it have to be made out of exactly a kikar of gold. Ain't a ba'a zahav, but if it's not made out of gold, ain't a ba'a kikar, then it doesn't need to be exactly a kikar. It can weigh more or less than that. A kikar, by the way, Rabbi Kaplan calculates in a Sefer of the Living Torah, he comes out at somewhere around 150 pounds. So you're talking about it's a fairly heavy thing. So the Braise continues, when it's in the Pasuk says V'er kaftere or frachaha, when it says it has to have the decorations, the cups, the cups, the knobs, and the flowers, mimeno yi, that they're supposed to be, made out of the same piece as it. Same thing, ba'a zahav, we learn from that, that if the menorah is made out of gold, ba'a gvim kaftere mufrachim, then it has to come, then it has to have all those decorations on it. But if it's not made out of gold, then it doesn't have to have those decorations. So all of that then, it doesn't have those decorations. Actually, the way Rashi phrases it is, you don't have to make the decorations. Rashi says it sounds like if you want to make them on a silver or copper or whatever menorah. On the other hand, the Rambam phrases it that you don't make an dvim kaftarim ufrachim, and the Mishnah Malach says that you davka should not make it. So this is the way we have it here in front of us in the Gemara, as the Girsa of how exactly we're learning. Tosfos discusses, and Tosfos has some questions on Rashi, and so did and Shitmuk Rebetzis also. They discuss like this. Really what it is you have five times in the Pesukim. First of all, it says five times in the Pesukim gold. In Parshas Truma, it says four times that the menorah should be made out of gold. And then you have a fifth time in Bahalos. But Parshas Tosfos is not counting the fact that it also mentions it in Parshas Vayakal when the menorah is made, because fine, there was just telling us that they followed Hashem's instructions exactly. But other than that, you have five. Here we're only focusing on three of them. So Tosfos says, listen, one of them might be Ligufoy, just to tell us, otherwise how would you know it's made out of gold, and the other one is needed for the klal of prata klal that the Gemara is going to discuss soon. And then Tosfos goes through exactly how it would work, but in any case, so again, there's different times when it says in the Pesukim Zahav, and therefore they have a slightly different Gusa in the Gemara of which Pesukim the Gemara is quoting for this purpose. In any case, the point is, from that braisa, it's very clear that the way we douse in the Pesukim, it has to mean necessarily that there's a difference between gold and other metals, that only if it's made out of gold does it have those various details of having to be a kicker and having to have the decorations, and otherwise not. There's no way you could make that work if you say no matter what, it has to be gold. And the only question is whether it has to be of a solid piece or not. What are you going to say? If it's not made out of a solid piece, then it doesn't have to have those decorations, and it doesn't have to be a kicker. It doesn't really work. The whole drasha is based on the fact that it's saying Zahav and saying these details in connection with Zahav. So therefore, it's very clear that we have to darshan the original psukim that we had brought about Zahav and Mikra, that it means that only Mikra is Ma'ak, when it's made out of gold, then Mikra is Ma'ak, and it has to be made out of one solid piece. But if it's made out of other metals, then it also doesn't have to be one solid piece. It also doesn't have to weigh a kicker, and it also doesn't have to have the Gvim Kaptarim of Brachim. Okay. So the Gemara asks, wait a minute though, so you're telling me that the Pesukim, that everything in the Pesukim is saying, all the details in the menorah is saying, is only if the menorah is made out of gold. So say the same thing as far as the branches. The imanami ba zahav ba kanim. Say also then that it would mean that if the menorah is made out of gold, then it has to have branches. Ain't a ba zahav, ain't a ba kanim. If it doesn't come from gold, then it doesn't have to have. Then it doesn't have to have branches. How do you know that not? And the answer is hahu pamoit mikri, because then it wouldn't be called a menorah. A menorah suggests that it has branches, but then it would just be called a pamoit, which is like a Rashi translates menorah katana, a small menorah. So the Torah is telling you to make a menorah, not a pamoit. So therefore, it's very clear that it has to have branches. And then the Taras HaKodesh adds the point. How do we know then that it still has to have seven branches? Is because the Pasuk says, Uknoisam, at this point, when the Pasuk is saying, Uknoisam, that it has to have branches, it doesn't say how many. Earlier it says that it has to have six branches, but here, at this point, when the Torah is summarizing, it just says that it has to have branches, and therefore so, and that means it has to have the same number of branches that we said before. Tosfos also points out, by the same token, the Gemara could have asked that it also mentions in Parshas Baaloscha, it says that the menorah has to have yurecha, has to have a base. So maybe you should say if it's not made out of gold, it doesn't have to have a base. And Tosfos says in the same way, if it doesn't have a base, you can't really call it a menorah. Okay. Next. So the Gemara says, so the Gemara continues. So again, let's talk about these details about the menorah. The pasuk says, "V'zeh masa menorah mikra zahav." This is the work of the menorah. It has to be made out of one solid piece of gold. So we learn from that, "Ba zah ba mikra." So like we said before, if it's made from gold, it has to be. So actually, we didn't say this before. "Ba zah ba mikra." Here's another drasha that we have, that if it's made out of gold, then it has to be made out of one solid piece. Ain't a ba zahav, but if it's not made out of gold, if it's made out of a different metal, ain't a ba mikra, then it does not have to be out of a solid, then it does not have to be out of a solid piece. So you can make it out of various pieces and attach them together. So the Rambam also points out, the Rambam also writes that if you make it out of other metals, it can also be hollow. Meaning, in other words, when it's a solid gold menorah, it can't be hollow. It has to be made out of one solid piece and hammered into the right shape, so it's not going to be able to be hollow. Whereas when it comes to other metals, then you can do that. So the Rambam actually does write to the Rambam when he does bring this halacha. He says no matter whether it's made out of other metals or not, it can never be made out of grutos. It can never be made out of broken pieces. It can be made out of. It doesn't have to be made out of. The Mishnah Melech talks about in the Rambam that lachatchila, even if you're making it out of other metals, you should still make it mikra. If you made it chalula, if you made it hollow, and you made it out of separate pieces attached together, then it would be b'diavad kosher. So the Gemara says mikra to sefer l'mayos. So what about when the pasuk continues And now it says mikra twice in the Pesukim in Bahalosna, because it says that the Zemasa Menorah mikra zahav, it's made out of one solid piece of gold, and then it finishes off, ad yurecha ad pircha, all the way down to its base and to the flower right above the base, which we're going to talk about on other days, mikra hi, it's one solid piece. So why does it repeat the word mikra? Lamai also, what is that coming for? The answer is, that comes to tell us, as opposed to the chatzotzris, where the trumpets, the silver trumpets that are also said in Parashas Vahaloscha, that Moshe was to make, and they were blown whenever they need to gather together the Jewish people, whenever they need to gather together the Nisim, as a signal that it's time to break camp and move on. So those silver trumpets are different than, are there by them it also says mikra, but there by them the din is the other way around as the menorah. The Tanya, namely we learn in a braisa, chatzotzris hoyaboy mina eshes, the chatzotzris were also made out of a solid piece, same thing, you distorted the piece of metal and hammered it into the right shape, mina kesef, and they had to specifically be made of silver. Now, primarily, we're talking about the ones that were made in Moshe Rabbeinu's times, where there it says that those were hidden away on the day that Moshe passed away. But Tosfos discusses over here that actually we're talking about the chatzotzris that we use in future generations as well. Now, Tosfos discusses there were actually two different types of chatzotzris that were used in the Beis Mikdash, the Kohanim, blue-silver ones, and then the Levim, as part of the orchestra in the Beis Mikdash, would use animal horns which are also called chatzotzris. But in future generations as well, they needed silver trumpets in the Beis Mikdash, and those were also made by hammering them out of one piece. Now there, if it's made out of several different pieces that are connected together, then it's kosher. But if they're made out of any other metal other than silver, even if they're made out of gold, then they're posel. So now we douse in all the mitzvahs, Tosfos points out. You have, one of them teaches us that the proper mitzvah is to make by the menorah, when it says mikra four times, so one of them teaches us there's a mitzvah to make it out of mikra. The second one tells us not just a mitzvah, if it's made out of gold, it's ma'ativ. The third, that it's possible if it's made out of grutois, out of broken pieces. The third one tells us that only when it's gold is it mikra. And the fourth one tells us, as opposed to the chatzotzris, where they have different rules, that you have to be mikra, but they could be made out of several pieces. So the Gemara says, why? Mishna mishamin ematris psulim. So what are you telling me? If the chatzotzris are made out of any other material, any other metal other than silver, they're possible. Dichtiv kesef v'havoya, because the pasuk says they should be made out of silver, and it continues, and they should be v'hoyu l'cha. And again, v'hoyu means it has to be exactly this way. Well, minagrutois nami. So then, why should it be kosher if it's made out of several pieces? Mikra v'havoya, because the pasuk says that the chatzotzris should also be mikra, and then it says havoya v'hoyu. So why are we? So the same question as we had by the menorah. The answer is Mitzrachmanah, Gabi Minerda, Mikshahi. Precisely for that reason, by the Minerda, the Torah says it is Mikra, which is a meal. He, Voloi Chatzotzer, that teaches us only the Minerda must be, if it's made out of the metal specified in the Torah, then it must be Mikra, but the Chatzotzer is not. Even they have to be made out of silver, but because it says Kesef and it says Havoya, but as far as them being out of one piece, no, that they can be made out of several pieces and connected together if necessary. Now let's talk about more generally what metals can the first of all let's talk about the chatzotzeris a little bit. So talking about bonon, kol hakevin she'asam Moshe, all the kevin that Moshe Rabbeinu made for the Mishkan, k'shedim loy, they're kosher for the Mishkan in his times, k'shedim l'dodos, and they're also kosher for future generations. Chatzotzeris, on the other hand, when it comes to the chatzotzeris, when it comes to these two silver trumpets, k'shedus loy, psulus l'dodos, those trumpets that were made in Moshe Rabbeinu's times are kosher for him, but they're possible for future generations. So the Gemara says chatzotzeris my timer. Now, why should the chatzotzeris be possible for future generations? Ilema, you're going to say, da'amakra, that the reason is because the pasuk says, asay l'cha, make for yourself two chatzotzeris, and that means l'cha v'lo l'doros, so it would mean only for you and not for future generations. Elameata, if you're going to learn that way, what about this? The word l'cha means only for your times. What about when the pasuk says, asisa l'cha aroinets, when Hashem tells Moshe, carve out two new lufas and make for yourself an aron of wood, hachinami de l'cha v'lo l'doros, does it mean also that it's only kosher for his times and not future generations? Now, there is, by the way, a machlokes between the Bavli and the Yerushalmi, whether how many aronis there were. The Bavli pretty consistently learns that there was only one aron, and that when it says, when Hashem tells him over here, make for yourself an aron, it means eventually there's going to be, as part of the construction of the Mishkan, there's going to be an aron made, and you're going to put the lufas in that. The Yerushalmi learns that there were actually two aronis. There was the one that Bezalel made, and then there was the one that Moshe had made when before Hashem told him to come and get the second lufas. And the Yerushalmi goes on to say the one that Moshe made, they used to keep broken lufas in it, the first lufas that were broken. The second one that Bezalel made would be used for the second lufas. And generally, now we know that they would take the aron with them to war. The Yerushalmi learns that the one that they would take is the one that contains the broken lufas. Except one time, in the time of Eli HaKoyen, they took the one with the whole luchos, and then that was the one that was captured by the Plishtim, and the whole story developed from there. In any case, so according to the Bavli, then the point is, well, Sisal Aron Eitz clearly doesn't mean that the Aron is kosher only from Moshe's times and not afterwards, otherwise I don't have an Aron from then on. And according to the Yerushalmi, the point would be apparently that they were saying that Aron is still usable in future generations. They wouldn't keep it in the Kodesh HaKadoshim, maybe, I don't know if it says where they would keep it, but they would take it with them to war all the time. So obviously the word l'cha does not mean to passel something that is, the word l'cha then does not mean to passel something that is, to passel it for after Moshe Rabbeinu's times. So why are we saying by the chatzotz, why on the face of it are we saying by the chatzotzris that it does, and we're saying that by the chatzotzris it would actually be possible after Moshe Rabbeinu's times. What's the logic? So Ella, no, rather we have to say, why does it say l'cha? Because there's other ways to dash in. Even under Omer l'cha mishalcha, there's an opinion in the Gemara in Yoma that says l'cha means that you have to make it out of your own fund. So Moshe himself has to give the silver for the chatzotzis. So either it means that, then it means that. Then it means that the silver had to be provided by Moshe Rabbeinu. Even under Omer, Kaviyachol Mishalchani Roitzeh Yosef Mishalahem, or the other opinion you have a Machlokas, Rabbi Yoshi and Rabbi Yonason in the Gemara and Yoma, Rabbi Yoshi holds it means you have to provide it yourself. Rabbi Yonason holds that Lacha means Hashem says Kaviyachol, so to speak, the Shalchani Roitzeh Yosef Mishalahem. I would prefer to have everything from you rather than from them. Meaning, in other words, Hashem tells Moshe, if it were possible to have only you contribute everything to the Mishkan, I would rather have that done. But it has to be done from the Tzibur, because the Tzibur can't get atonement with something that belongs only to the Yachid. So therefore, so to speak, I have no choice but to accept from the Tzibur as a whole. So now, with Chabad HaChatzotzis, Hashem is mentioning that point to Moshe Rabbeinu. In any case, the point is, well then, so the l'cha that we're talking about over there is by the Aron. So again, it can mean that Hashem is telling Moshe, provide the wood, and I guess the gold, for the Aron, or it means that Hashem is telling him that,
that if I had a choice, everything would be made only from you. Well, in our case, the same thing applies then to the chatzotzos. So why are we insisting that chatzotzos, that lechol by chatzotzos means that it's kosher only for that it's kosher only in Moshe Rabbeinu's times, and afterwards they are and afterwards they're pasul. So the Gemara answers, "Shani hosam do amakro lechol lechol trei zimni." The difference is by the chatzotzos it says lechol twice. At first it says "asay lechol," make for yourself two chatzotzos, and then it continues "v'hoyu lechol," and they should be for you. So therefore, so again, shana alav achosav la'akiv. The Torah is telling us that the Torah is repeating the point to us, and therefore saying that it's ma'akiv, and therefore, as usual, then it means that it's ma'akiv, and that's how we learn, therefore, that it had to be, that it could be used only in Moshe Rabbeinu's time, and they were apostle afterwards. Rashi mentions in Parshas Hazinu that on the day that Moshe passed away, they were hidden, because the Pasuk in Kehelet says, "In Shilton, B'yem HaMavos." There's no bossship. There's no master. There's no kingship. No rulership on the day of death. And therefore, on the day that Moshe passed away, like this, they have the trumpets, where meant Moshe should be treated kind of as like a king. Whenever he needs to assemble the people, they would blow trumpets, just like you always have, when royalty is around. But now, on the day that Moshe passed away, Ein Shilton B'yem HaMavos, there's no more dominion on that day, and therefore the trumpets were hidden away. Getting back to the menorah, Tony the Papa braid Rav Chanan Tamed Rav Yosef, Rav Papa the son of Rav Chanan taught a braisa in front of Rav Yosef. Menorah hoisa bar mina eshes. Again, the menorah was made out of one solid piece, like we learned before. Mina zahav, specifically a solid block of gold. Asal shal kesef kshera, if he made the menorah out of silver, it'll still be kosher. Asal shal bas, if he made it out of tin, v'shal over, or lead, v'shal gisterin, or if he made it out of gisterin, which elsewhere is defined as meaning so Rashi over here gives a French translation of it, that means basically an alloy. Rashi uses the word leitun or a different word, mittel, which are both of those. Mittel, I guess, is the word metal. Leitun, I don't know, but whatever. They both mean essentially an alloy, a mixture of many different metals. So if he made the menorah out of that, Rebbe Poisel, Rebbe says it'll be possible, but Rabbi Yosef of Yehuda Masher. Rabbi Yosef of Yehuda says that it'll be kosher if it's made out of those various other metals other than gold and silver. Shall etz, shall etzem, shall schuchis, but if it's made out of wood or bone or glass, dirahakop psula, then everybody will agree that it's possible. So that's how the braisa went. Rabbi Yosef says, "My gaitach, what are you thinking? How are you understanding Rabbi Yosef of Yehuda's opinion? Why should he say that it's kosher? What are you explaining? How are you explaining the machlokas over here? How are you explaining why should it be that why does Rabbi Yosef of Yehuda say that it's kosher if it's made out of tin, but not if it's made out of wood, for example?" Amalei, so Papa answers, Bein Mar, Claudio Proti Daushi. The answer is both Rebbe and Rabbi Yosef of Yehuda are Daushining the Pasuk using Klal or Prat. In other words, like this, when the Pasuk says, V'asisa menorah zahav tahor, you should make a menorah out of pure gold, Mikra te'osa menorah, the menorah should be made out of one piece, should be made. So therefore, you have a Klal or Prat or Klal over here. Because you have the word valsisa is a klal, make the menorah no matter what. Zahav tor is a prat, specifically pure gold. And te'osa menorah, as we learned on Amud Aleph, means make it no matter what. So, mihu, so however, mar sova, Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Yehuda holds that you daushin like this. Ma prat mefurash, what can we say specifically about the prat? What can we say? What is the properties of gold? Shalmatchas, that it's made out of metal. Apkol shalmatchas, therefore he says any kind of metal is going to be kosher. So even if it's made out of tin or lead or whatever, then it'll still be kosher. Whereas Rebbe holds, no, ma prat mefurish, you know what's specified about the prat, about gold, dover choshu, something important. So an important, precious metal that you can make a menorah of. I've called dover choshu the same way that it has to be made out of some kind of precious metal. So therefore, it can't be made out, according to Rebbe, then it can't be made out of tin or lead or what have you, which are base metals. So, uh, The Chiddushim Amuchasim LaRashba points out that the Gemara elsewhere talks about that kelim made out of boneware are actually quite expensive. But so still, Rebbe is not going to say that's kosher if it's made out of bone. In other words, it has to be. So first of all, he says that it means only the thing that's second in its preciousness to gold, namely silver. And also, he says it has to be two things. It has to be a metal, and it has to be expensive. So bone is expensive, but it's not a metal. And other metals are metal, but they're not expensive. So said a papa braid of Chanan explains to Rabbi Yosef that would be the reasoning behind the two opinions. Amalei, however, Rabbi Yosef says to the papa, smidi doch mekamedidi, delete your braisa in favor of mine. Namely, I have a different version of the braisa where you can see where it comes out that machlokas is different. So, namely, the Tanya, we learn in another braisa, klei shardis shasan shal eitz. When clay shardis, any kelim that are used for serving in the Beis Mikdash that are made out of wood, Rebbe poisel, Rebbe Yosi Rebbe Yehuda machshir. Rebbe says they'll be poisel, Rebbe Yosi Rebbe Yehuda says that they'll be kosher. So in other words, so they both agree, in other words, that they can be made out of any metal. The question is only if they're made out of wood, which is not a metal. So, Gemai Kamifagi, now we would understand what's the machloik, what's the underlying machloikas, is not, according to the Papa's version, they're both daushening klal prat to klal, and the question is only what the prat is, whether the prat means specifically precious metals, or whether it means any metals. But, Rebbe Dorish Klalio Prati, the answer is yes, Rebbe is daushening using the klal prat to klal system, but Rabbi Yosi Rebbe Yehuda Dorish Ribuyo Miuti. But Rabbi Yosi Rebbe Yehuda is daushening using a different system called Ribuyo Miut. Now the difference is, klal prat to klal means basically, we're going to say like this, you have the klal originally means everything. Then the prat would tell us limit it only to the prat. The klal, again, would tell us don't just limit it to the prat, but create a class of things that are similar to the prat, and that's what the second klal is coming to include. Not to include everything again, but only to include things that are fairly similar to the prat. Ribuy miut ribuy would mean, we start with ribuy means including everything, miut means exclude something, but we don't know how much to exclude yet. And the second ribuy would tell us, include everything except miut, tells us to exclude one thing. So according to that, then it means that there's a ribuy miut ribuy is gonna come out with many more things included other than a klal or prat klal, because with a ribuy miut ribuy, we're gonna have, there's only gonna be one thing, which is the least similar to the prat, to the miut, is gonna be excluded. So it goes like this. Rebbe Darsh Klali Uprati, when Rebbe Darshan's Klal Uprati, it goes as follows. Valsisa Menurah's Klal, when it says you should make a Menurah, that's a Klal. Zahav Tahar Prat, when it says make it out of pure gold, that's a Prat. Victra Te'osa Menurah, when the Pasuk continues, make the Menurah out of one piece, Chosav HaKolo, then that's a Klal. We're not doing the word Mikra, Shita Mukabetis points out, because the word Mikra we used before, we said that if it's not made out of gold, it doesn't have to be Mikra. We just mean, in other words, the fact that it says Te'osa, the fact that it says it should be made, so therefore we have a Klal. So Rebbe says, Klal Uprat to Klal, you have to don al Kena Prat. So therefore, when you have that kind of thing, then you have to judge only what's similar to the Prat. Ma prat before the shalmatchas. What is specified about the prat? That it's a type of metal, because gold is a metal. Akol shalmatchas, then you learn from that that the menorah and other clay shards as well have to specifically be made out of metal. Rabbi Yosi, Rabbi Yehuda, Dorish, Ribuy Miuti, whereas Rabbi Yosi, Rabbi Yehuda, Daushan's it using the Ribuy Miut Ribuy system. So he says, well, Sis Menorah Saribas, of course you have a Ribuy, make the Menorah no matter what. Zahav Tahar Miut, when it says make it out of pure gold, then that's a Miut. Mikra Ta'asa Menorah Chazar Riba, and when it says make it out of one solid piece, the Menorah shall be made, Chazar Riba, then that's a Ribuy, it should be made no matter what. So ribo miut viriba hakol. So now when you have the second ribuy, then it comes to include everything or almost anything. My rabbi, what is it? Or my rabbi. So what is it including? Rabbi komili. It's including everything, meaning that the menorah can be made out of anything, even non-metal. Or my miut. So what is the one thing? If we have the miut in the middle, we have to delete something. So what are we deleting? Menorah shocheres. We're just miut shocheres. We're excluding that it can't be made out of earthenware, because earthenware is the cheapest of all metals, the cheapest of all materials. It's not even suitable. You wouldn't even do it in front of a human king. How much more so in front of Hashem? But other than that, Rabbi Yosi Rabbi Yehuda says anything that's more valuable than clay charis, you can use for the menorah, and the same thing with the other clay charis. Okay. So Rabbi Yosef is telling Rav Papa that my version of the Braisa is better than yours. In mine, they both agree they can be made out of any kind of metals, but Rabbi Yosef Bibi Horda allows even non-metals, and Rabbi says only metals. That was Rabbi Yosef's version. Whereas Rav Papa's version was that they both agree they can be made out of gold or silver, and Rebbe holds only gold or silver, whereas Rabbi Yosef Bibi Horda holds other metals as well. But according to his version, even Rabbi Yosef Bibi Horda agreed that it can't be made out of non-metals. So Rav Papa says, Adrav, smidi doch mikam edidi. You're telling me delete my braisa and my version of the machlokas in favor of yours. Maybe it should be the other way around. Maybe my version of the machlokas is correct. So Rav Yosef answers, lo sakadai doch. You can't think that way. Titania, because we learn in another braisa which backs up my version of the machlokas. Emoi zahav, if you don't have gold for the menorah, maybe afshal kesef. Then you can also make a menorah out of silver. Shal nechoshes, you can make it out of copper. Shal barazol, or iron. Shal bedil, or tin. Vishal eferes, or lead. Rabbi Yosef Bibi Horda machshir af b'shal eitz. And Rabbi Yosef Bibi Horda says that it's kosher even if it's made out of wood. So now we have two braises that go according to Rabbi Yosef, that explain Rabbi Yosef's opinion and say that one of them clearly says that if it's made out of wood, then it's kosher. So now two braises beat one. Besides that, also Chidushim Amichasim LaRashba points out the original braisa didn't even talk about the menorah specifically, just clay sharis. But now we have a braisa specifically talking about the menorah. So therefore, it must mean that this braisa is correct and the other one is not. Vitanya idach. Furthermore, the Gemara continues. We learn in another braisa that also backs up this understanding of Rabbi Yosef Bibi Horda. The braisa says, Lo yasa adam bais tavnis heichol. A person is not allowed to make a house in the image of the heichol, to have the exact same length, width, and height. This is at the end of this past week's parasha we had where the pasuk says lois sasun iti. Hashem says do not make with me, and that means it's a mitzvah not to make replicas of certain things that are used for the service of Hashem. So that includes making replicas of the various kelim and parts of the Beis Mikdash. So you're not allowed to make a house the same size as the heichol, the length, width, and height. Achsadra keneged ulam. A person is not allowed to make an achsadra, a front porch, paralleling the ulam, the front entryway of the heichol, which had walls on three sides and was open on the fourth side. Technically, it had a wall on the fourth side, but the doorway of the ulam was 40 amas tall and 20 amas wide, twice the length and twice the height of any of the other doorways in the Beis Mikdash. So practically speaking, it was completely open on that side. So you're not allowed to make a porch in that same dimensions. Chotzer keneged azari, you're not allowed to make a chotzer the same size as the azara. Shulchan keneged shulchan. You're not allowed to make a shulchan, a replica of a shulchan in the Beis Mikdash, and the same thing with the other kelim. Menorah keneged menorah, and the same thing. You can't make a menorah in the same type as was made in the Beis Mikdash. Now you would be allowed to make a menorah of five branches or six or eight. So for example, we have very commonly in shuls, they have a five-branched menorah in front of the chazan. That actually represents the five levels in the neshama. So such things are allowed, or six or eight, but not seven. The shoshiva lo yasa, you're not allowed to make a seven-branched menorah after the meshamine matzvos, even out of other types of metal. Why? Because we just said, because you would be allowed to make the menorah in the Beis Mikdash out of other kinds of metal. But, in other words, so far the braisa is saying that you would be allowed to make a wooden menorah of seven branches, because wood they couldn't use in the Beis Mikdash. Rabbi Yosef bar Rabbi Yehuda Omer, af shel eitz lo yaseh. Rabbi Yosef bar Yehuda says you can't make one out of wood either. Kederach shasa malchei beis chashmonoi, as just as we find that the kings of the chashmonoim did. When they recaptured the Beis Mikdash from the Greeks, the golden menorah had been taken. I think I've quoted before a story from the Medrash about how they sent in a messiavin named Yosef Meshisa to get the original menorah, and he brought it out, and then they told him, go in and get something else, and he refused, because at that point he did tshuva, and said, I don't want to anger Hashem again, and they tortured him to death. In any case, the point is, that menorah was gone, and therefore the Hashminoim had to make a new one, and they were poor, they couldn't afford to make a new one out of gold. And so Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Huda says, you have Maaser Rav, you have an actual example in history where they made a menorah out of wood and it was kosher. But the other Chachamim said to him, Nisham Raya, you're bringing a proof from there? No, it wasn't actually wood. Shvudim Shal Barzal Hayu, they brought iron spits. The spits, in other words, like plain pieces of iron, because again, like we said before on Amud Aleph, you don't have the decorations when you're making it out of other metals. So the chipum bebat, and they plated them with tin. The reason why they would do that is in order that it should look a little, so it should look a little nicer. They only have iron available. They don't have anything else, but at least they're gonna plate it with tin, so it looks a little bit nicer. On the other hand, the Tosfos Rid points out that they couldn't make it all out of tin because then it would bend. It wouldn't be strong enough. So they had to make it out of iron, but they plated it with tin. The Aruch HaNer actually learns that, what do you have in the Machlokes b'Metzius? Did they make it out of wood? Did they make it out of wood or not? So the Aruch HaNer explains that actually maybe then they did make a wooden one because they were all Tomei Mes. And a wooden one won't be Mekabel Tumah, whereas a metal one would. But then Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Yehuda says, you see that a wooden one is kosher. Otherwise, how could they use it? The Chacham say, no, on the contrary, that's the proof. As soon as they were tahor, they immediately replaced it with one made out of metal. And only because they were tummy mess, they had no choice for those first few days to use a wooden one. The Tosfos Rid also explains that what happened was that when tin discolors, when it tarnishes or whatever, then it looks from a distance like wood. So therefore, some people actually thought that it was made out of wood. So there's a couple of explanations how Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Yehuda could say that it was made out of wood. In any case, continues the Braisa, Heshiru, later on, when the Hashminoim became richer and they were able to afford something nicer, Asom Shel Kesef, then they made the menorah out of silver. And when they made it, became even richer, Asom Shel Zahav, then they made it out of gold the way it's supposed to be. So therefore, we see that there's a machlokas over here, Rabbi Yosef Yehuda is clearly saying that a menorah made out of wood is kosher for the Beis Hamikdash, and therefore, that according to him, you can't make a seven-branch menorah out of wood, because that would be duplicating the kelim of the Beis Hamikdash, whereas according to the Chachamim, it's fine, because in the Beis Hamikdash, you couldn't use wood, even the Chashmonaim, they're saying use iron plated with tin, And therefore, there's no problem in future generations of making a seven-branch menorah out of wood, because it would anyway be possible to use in Beis Hamikdash. So now the Gemara goes in. Let's start talking about the details of the decorations of the menorah. Amar Shmuel Mishmei Desava. Shmuel said in the name of an old Talmud Chacham. Goyva Shel Menorah, the height of the menorah, Shmona Asa Tfachim, was 18 Tfachim tall. Why 18 Tfachim? Tosfos brings one explanation. The name of Rabbeinu Tam is because the Shulchan was directly opposite the menorah, and the Shulchan were the Snifim, we're going to learn later in the Masechta about the flames that were next to the Shulchan that helped keep the Lachem Aponim in place. Those were 18 Tfachim tall, and since the purpose of the menorah, as the Pasuk says, V'heir al Evaponel, it's supposed to shine towards the Shulchan, then it needs to be the same height as the Shulchan. On the other hand, Tosfos disagrees and says Rabbeinu Tam could not possibly have said that, because later on in the Masechta we're going to talk about that the height of those snifim was, according to different opinions, 12 or 15 tvachim, so it still wouldn't work with 18 tvachim. So the Rambam writes that the menorah was 18 tefachim tall, the height of a person. So another way of understanding why 18 tefachim is because that is the height. That's the height of an average person. 18 tefachim is 3 amos, and therefore that would be another. There are different ways of looking at it, whether a person is 3 or 4 amos tall. But according to that way of looking at it, it would be the 3 amos would be the height of a person, and therefore. And therefore, that would be a reason for it to be 18 tefachim. We're going to be talking about, actually, when we talk about, we're going to talk about how many of each of the decorations there were. There is a very interesting explanation, that there's a very interesting, I think, that Rabbeinu B'chaye brings this, that the number of words in each of the in the first pasuk of each of the five chumashim corresponds to one of the numbers when it comes to the menorah. So in particular, the first pasuk of Chumash Bamidbar has 17 words. So according to that way of looking at it, it's not 18 tefachim, it's 17 and a fraction. There's an explanation because it says vizeh maaseh menorah, and this is the work of the menorah. So therefore the word vizeh is gematria 18. Okay, so the menorah was 18 tefachim tall, or again maybe 17 and a fraction. How does it break down? Haraglayim, the feet of the menorah, namely the base of it. Rashi explains. So Rashi on the pasuk explains that there was a box-like thing on the bottom of it, and then there were feet sticking out of it. The Rambam actually draws it, and in the Rambam's diagram, the Rambam's famous diagram of it, he draws it as a dome-shaped base, but again with feet underneath it. Famously, the menorah that's depicted on the Arch of Kittros has a hexagonal base, but the Rebbe points out in the Sicha there's good reason for a variety of reasons to say that menorah is not the original one of the Beis Mikdash. It could be some other menorah. It could be any number of other possibilities, but it's almost certainly not the actual menorah of the Beis Mikdash. Anyway, so that base was Shloshet Raglaim Vaperach, and then directly above the base there was a flower, as the Gemara is going to later on derive how we know that. Shloshet Tvachim, that takes up three Tvachim. Tifchaim Cholak, then the next two, the fourth and fifth Tefach, are just the central stem, just the central branch without any decorations. So that brings us to five Tvachim. The Tefach Shabagvia Vakaftar Perach, then in the next Tefach, there's a gvia, which is one of the cup decorations, and a kaftar, a knob decoration, operach and a flower. So Rashi explains what it means is that on each side, it means that on different sides there was one sticking out. So on one side there would be a gvia, on the other side within that same tefach is a kaftar, and on the other side in that same tefach would be a perach. That's according to Rashi. Tosfos, on the other hand, wonders how is it that all the other ones later on, we're going to say the kaftorim, were one tefach apiece. And here we're saying all of a sudden you have within one tefach, you have three of them, which implies that Tosfos understands that they would have been stacked one on top of the other. So in other words, it would in fact mean, according to that way of looking at it, they were stacked one on top of the other rather than being on different sides. The Rambam and his diagram shows them one next to the other, but that could be because they actually were. It could just be because when the Rambam is drawing, he didn't maybe have the ability to show it in 3D and be able to show it sticking in different directions, like Rashi says. Anyway, so that's in the sixth tefach. You have that. Utvachaim cholok. Then you have another two tefachim of just bare stem. So that brings us up to eight tefachim so far. The tefach kafter. Then in the ninth tefach, you have a knob. Ushnei kanim yotzim menu echad elach ve'echad elach, and two branches coming out from that knob, each one going upward in one direction or the other. V'nimshachin va'olim k'neged goy v'shamanera, and they go all the way up to correspond to the height of the middle stem. Famously, you have the discussion whether the branches were round or straight. The Rambam draws them as straight, and Rabbi Avraham ben Rambam says it definitely was that way. Rashi also describes it as v'alachson, which means diagonal, which would also mean straight. And there's a number of different points that are made in that connection. Before, we said that the Chashmonaim used shkudin shabarzel, iron spits, which for pashtus are straight. The word kanim itself, the word kone itself also, which literally means a stem of a plant, also suggests something straight. So the Rebbe says there's very strongly famous sicha that they dafka were straight, and the whole idea of drawing them round comes again from gorgeous sources such as the Arch of Titus. They found various depictions of the menorah, some even that seem to be from the times of the second Mishnah. Some of them are drawn with round branches. So different people argue about it. For example, the Machon HaMikdash, the organization in the old city that works on reconstructing how things should be in the third base of Mikdash, their famous menorah that's on display in the old city has round branches. I asked them about it one time. They said, basically their research shows that they claim that their research shows that the branches were round. I once saw, many years ago, an interesting essay by Lubavitcher and Tovia Bloy, who argues that maybe the vote is they're supposed to be straight, but look, b'dieved, they make them round, and they're still kosher. It never says anywhere that they would be possible. So maybe what it is they didn't have the technical know-how in the time of the second Mishnah to make it with straight branches, and therefore, of necessity, they made them round. They found recently
a pendant in Yerushalayim from the Muslim period, about 700 years of today's calendar, and it was straight.
Interesting.
The branches were straight.
Interesting. So that the ninth tefach contains that knob and the base of the two branches. The tefach cholak, then you have a tefach is smooth. The tefach kafter, then you have another tefach with another knob. And the second set of branches comes out of that knob. And they go up to the height to be equal to the height of the first set of branches and of the middle of the menorah. The tefach cholak. Then you have another empty tefach. The tefach kafter. And then you have the third knob and the third set of branches that comes out of it. So far, the tefachim cholak. And then at that point you have two tefachim of empty space. So far you've accounted for 15 tefachim. The shtayrushim shloisha tefachim. Since we said the menorah is 18 tefachim, so you have three left. Shabahen shloisha gvirin v'kafter v'ferach. In those three tefachim, you have the last three of the cup shaped decorations and the knob and the flower, and there's your 18 tefachim. Again, what does that mean? Does it mean that the three gvirin would be stacked one inside the other and take up one tefach, and then the kafter would be the tefach and the perach one tefach? What does it mean they would stick out on different sides? So the Gemara is later going to go on into how we learn all these details, how we learn how many gvim, kafterim, and prochim there were in the different places. Rashi mentions over here to start with that since the pasuk says in the central stem had four gvim, then that means that there were four on it. So we had one down near the base and three more at the top. And same thing with some of the other ones we're going to say. And the Braisa continues, Ugvian Lamahin Donim. What did the Gvian resemble? They mean cups, but what kind of cups did they resemble? Kimin Kosis Alexandrian. They resembled Alexandrian cups, which are long and skinny. And in particular, the Raman actually explains that it means they actually tapered to a point near the base. In the Rambam's diagram, he shows them as triangles, and he actually shows them as upside down triangles with the openings of the cups facing downward. In a sicha, the Rebbe talks about the deeper idea behind that is that the same way as the windows of the Beis HaMikdash were narrow on the inside and wide on the outside to represent that the Beis HaMikdash is shedding light from it, spreads out light to the whole world. The same way over here, the cups of the menorah were upside down, the decorative cups were upside down to represent the same idea that the outflow of the menorah is pouring out and being shed onto the whole world. So they were like these cups, the narrow on the bottom and then wider on the top. Kafter and Mahin Dermin, what did the knobs resemble? Tapuchea Kresim. They resembled apples from Kresim, from a name of a place. The Rambam describes that to be exact, they were more oval. So they were not really oval but elliptical. They were wider than they were tall. What did the flowers resemble? They resembled the flower decorations that you have on columns. You look, for example, at columns in fancy buildings, and all sometimes they have flower shaped decorations and there's flower shaped capitals. So then this is the same kind of thing. So that's what the flowers, that's what the, so Rashi describes, you know, they're just images, they're pictures that are drawn on columns. The Rambam explains that it's basically like a bowl with the lip turned outward, so it kind of resembles a flower. So it comes out altogether. You have 22 gvim, as the Gemara is going to calculate later on. Kaftorim acharos. So you have 9 kaftorim. Prochem tisha. There are nine flowers. Gvim ma'akvim zaseh. Now all the gvim are ma'akvim one another, meaning you have to have all of them, all 22 of them. Kaftorim ma'akvim zaseh. You have to have the proper number of kaftorim, no less, when it's made out of gold, as we learned on Amud Aleph. Prochem ma'akvim zaseh. And the flowers are ma'akvim one another. And you have to have all 9 of them, Gvim, Kaftorim, Prochem, Ma'akvim, Zeseh, and all of them are Ma'akvim one another. If you have even one of these decorations missing, then it's no good. So again, if it's made out of other metals, then it's kosher. But if it's made out of gold, then it has to be made with these. As I was just saying, actually, Rabbeinu Bechaya, I think it is, points out that the initial psukim of each of the 5 chumashim correspond to one of the details of the menorah. Chumash Bereishis, the first pasuk has 7 words, Bereishis Bara Elokim Hashamayim Ve'haaretz, that corresponds to the 7 branches of the menorah. The first pasuk of Shmos has 11 words corresponding to the 11 kaftorim. The first pasuk of Vayikra has 9 words corresponding to the 9 9 prachim. The first pasuk of Bamidbar has 17 words corresponding to the 17 plus tfachim of the height, because again, according to him, the height was not exactly 18 tfachim, it was a little bit less. And the first pasuk of Bamidbar, the first pasuk of Devarim, has 22 words corresponding to the 22 gvim that we're saying over here. So therefore, the menorah, in its very shape and in its decorations, represents the Torah as a whole. So we'll continue tomorrow, Beis Hashem, talking about how we know those numbers and working out exactly how the menorah was made and various other details of it.
Yeah.